Welcome to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast. Clay Link alongside James Anderson. You can find James on Twitter at RealJRAnderson. I'm at Clay W. Link. Last time without an intro song, entrance theme is kind of how I want to term it. I mean, we really need one. I think, you know, we'll have to settle on one.
We don't have one, but we have one. We're going to have one.
Yeah. I mean, we grade it. Wrestlers based on entrance, you know, that's one of the five tools.
Right now we're sitting at a cool 20.
Really lame just intro, but hey, we're going to change that very soon. But James, good to be on with you. You just got back from a trip to see some pretty cool minor league teams. Looking forward to hearing about that. But first, want to give a shout out to one of our loyal listeners to the podcast, Andrew Frank on Twitter, at 2_BeQuietFrank. He's saying the people want a Swaggy V update. Swaggy V, of course, Daniel Vogelbach, Cubs prospect, 22-year-old. Off to a really strong start at Double A Tennessee, James. I mean, 19 for 44, 432 average, two homers, 9 RBI. Pretty good stuff.
Yeah, ask and you shall receive. Definitely never hurts to talk about Vogelbach. If you were just going off the numbers, probably came in with lesser expectations after his performance last season. But, just given his age, given where he was playing, I think that you kind of had to look beyond those numbers. And this is kind of the version of Vogelbach that we've all been sort of waiting on, middle of the order, basically just a designated hitter, like a guy that could hit cleanup in a big league order and would not play the field. Obviously that can't happen if he remains in the Cubs system and the National League doesn't have a DH, but walking a ton. He's got 8 walks, just 3 strikeouts so far. Slugging like crazy, hitting right behind Kyle Schwarber. I mean, that's got to be one of the more just power-laden middles of the order in all the minors. I mean, a 3-4 combo like that, I mean, that's pretty deadly. Albert Almora hitting in the two-hole ahead of those guys, too. So, if you get a chance to check out the Smokies this year, I would recommend it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you the stat that maybe is most encouraging that you pointed out is the 8-3 walk to K. I mean, that's a great rate. And last year he had a pretty good mark, 266-91 at High A Daytona. You know, the big question is, though, is his future really with this organization? And, I know we've kind of talked about this a bit, and there really doesn't seem to be a fit for him on the major league roster. I mean, 22 years old and probably a little ways off, but Anthony Rizzo locked in and really, limited defensively. You look at that, starting staff on the major league roster. I mean, there's, Jason Hamill's kind of struggled a bit, and, of course, Travis Wood at the back end, not the best option. Do you think it's realistic to think that he's going to get flipped for a starter at some point?
Yeah, no, I when I wrote about, what the Cubs are going to look like in 2017, I had him as one of the guys that they'd end up trading. But, one avenue for him to stay that nobody really talks about is at some point, there's going to be a DH in the NL. I mean, I think that's kind of inevitable. I would say within the next 10 years, I would expect that to get done with a new commissioner. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets done sooner than later, just because, we're trying to get more viewers in the game. I mean, we're trying to get more eyes watching baseball, and nobody really wants to see pitchers hit, and people want to see runs scored. So it just makes sense that you're going to eventually have a DH in both leagues. And, if that happens in, say, 2017 or 2018 and the Cubs kind of get a sense that it's going to happen, then they might just hang on to him because, he might be one of the better options out there in 5 years or so. So that's one way that he could stay in Chicago. Obviously, a Rizzo injury or something like that's another way. But, one way or another, I think you'll see his bat in the majors by 2017.
Yeah, that's an interesting scenario that you laid out. I hadn't really thought about that, but I know – they're just definitely going to be people who fight that DH in the NL, but I think you're right that, we got a pretty progressive new commissioner, and I think he would, definitely consider that and maybe push for that in a couple of years. That's something I hadn't really thought about with Swaggy V, but there you go. Frank, we're glad you're still listening and rooting on Swaggy V. We'll try to get you some semi-regular updates on him throughout the year. And, of course, we're going to be touching on all the top prospects in the game throughout the year. We're going to be watching a game, a minor league game Monday, in preparation for next week's prospect pod. But this week we're going to focus on, James, your trip to Springdale, Arkansas. Wrote a really great piece for the site, your latest Farm Futures article. If you want to check that out and don't have a RotoWire subscription, you get 10 days on us by going to rotowire.com/pod. No strings attached here. Before we get into some of your analysis of some of these players, I want to know, you know, what you thought of Springdale.
So Springdale's, you know, obviously it's in Northwest Arkansas, which is the name of the AA affiliate down there. It's about 20 miles away from Fayetteville, where the University of Arkansas is. But I didn't end up going to Fayetteville. I stayed in Springdale the whole time. You know, kind of about what I expected. You know, I mean, it's a, you know, Arkansas, I would say, you know, definitely qualifies as being in the South, but doesn't really have, you know, the type of cool stuff that come with being in the South in some parts.
Charm.
You know, like, it doesn't have charm. Doesn't have charm. I mean, when I go to a new city, like, the first thing I'm really trying to do is, you know, eat some of the local food and, you know, get into what do they have to offer, like, food wise. You know, what's a great restaurant around here? What should I be doing with my free time? And so I ask the cab driver that picks me up at the airport. I'm like, so, you know, what are you guys kind of known for food wise? And he's like, chickens. The food company Tyson is based there. So, I mean, that's kind of where he was going. But it's like, you know, I'm not going to go buy some chicken patties because, like, yeah. I mean, like, so it's not, you know, it's not like New Orleans where you can go get some gumbo or Texas where you can go get, you know, some Tex-Mex or some barbecue. They're really just not known for anything. And when I got picked up by an Uber driver after the game on Tuesday, I asked him, you know, is there – Any good local, like, pizza joints? I mean, most towns have, like, at least one, you know, quality place that makes a nice pizza. And he says, well, I would say Domino's, but they're under new management, so I'd probably have to say Pizza Hut. Like, so that, I mean, that's kind of where we were. That's kind of where I was staying. That's where I was living. But
ouch, man.
There was a hot tub in the comfort suites I stayed in, so spent some time in there.
You told me before we came on that was the only Uber driver in the area?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, here in Madison, if you want to get, like, an Uber anywhere, you're going to be taken care of within probably 3 to 5 minutes. There was one guy working the Tri-City area of Fayetteville, Springdale, and another neighboring town, and he drove me on four occasions over a 3 day span because there was nobody else. I would just be like, oh, want an Uber, and it'd be like, oh, that's gonna be 26 minutes because Rick's down in Fayetteville right now, but he'll make his way up here and as soon as he can. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I was living.
Oh man, it sounds like you got to know that guy fairly well.
Not really. We didn't talk much. Okay. Once I got his taste of pizza, then I kind of stopped asking him for recommendations.
Just kind of wrote him off after that.
It's like, you can't help me at all.
I respect that. Now, I know you did go to one, you know, barbecue place that was, I think you may have found on Yelp or
right.
something.
Right, yeah. The Rib Crib.
How was that?
It was all right. I just went because it was called the Rib Crib, and I felt, you know, perusing the Yelp page of Springdale, Arkansas, you could really, I mean, you could do a lot worse than the Rib Crib. I think it had like a 3.5-star rating, which I felt was good enough to warrant a visit. And I was actually hoping that they'd have some merch for sale, but that was that was not the case. It happened to be all you can eat ribs and sides night on a Tuesday, so delved into that. I mean, the the beans were quality, the ribs were okay, the slaw was terrible. So I mean, I'd give it an overall like C plus on the food, but good bang for my buck. They had that for a beer selection. They had Bud Light, Budweiser, MGD, and Miller Lite. I went with the went with the Miller Lite bottles. Had a few of those. So yeah, living large.
Sounds like a classic minor league baseball town, realistically. Which, I mean, may not have actual charm, but I mean, if you're a minor league fan, I mean, you can kind of, you know, grow to like it, I guess, to a certain extent. But you know, glad to have you back and you know, see hear some of your takes here on some of these guys. Really enjoyed your piece, and we'll start with Miguel Almonte of the Royals. Affiliate Northwest Arkansas, 22-year-old right-hander. Now, James, he struggled first couple starts of the year, 6 earned runs allowed on 7 hits, 4 walks. He also hit 3 batters in 5 innings only, but you know, the pitching coach said the righty stuff was still, you know, pretty decent in those outings despite the poor results. You got to see his third start of the year. What did you see that you liked, and what did you see that you didn't?
Well, I mean, it couldn't have picked a better day to go watch Almonte. I mean, he had that fastball working, and you know, from what I'd gathered when I went in, like the first thing I wanted to know was, could he possibly be hurt? Because those numbers in his first two starts don't really make a ton of sense unless you were watching them. And you know, it sounded like he was fine. I mean, their pitching coach Jim Brouwer said, you know, the stuff was all fine. It was just kind of a matter of, you know, locating that fastball so that hitters couldn't sit on his off-speed stuff. And in that game on Monday, he was just throwing BBs, you know, up in the zone, on the edge of the plate, on the outside, on the inside. I mean, he was really kind of painting. And then that just allowed for his, you know, his changeup and his curveball to kind of do the rest. So, I mean, he was really relying on that fastball, but it was more than enough to get the job done. I think the stadium gun was reading 92 for most of the night, but from what I gathered, I mean, there was a, you know, Pitch FX crew in the media room and just talking to the coaches, he was probably closer to 93-94, and you know, he might have actually dialed it back a little bit after his first two starts just to get that command going. I mean, he might have been in the 95-96 range and then just took a little bit off to make sure he was locating. And you know, as long as he's doing that, especially at the double A level, I think he'll be fine. So I'm anxious to see what he does in his next start.
Yeah, 0 walks allowed in this one. That's good to see. You know, you look at the kind of abbreviated outings, but that's kind of, you know, all by design. They're going to cap them at around 4 innings or 60 pitches in the early going. Maybe he could reach up to 140 frames this season, but where do you see him settling into the major league rotation long term?
Well, they view him as a top of the rotation type of arm, like a guy that could be, you know, that could start game one or game two of a postseason series. I think that, I mean, that's definitely the best case scenario. I don't really quite see number one upside, but I could see him being a number two if really everything broke right. But I think they should be kind of just hoping that he's a solid number three. And I don't really think they need him to be more than a number three. I think he's got the stuff to do that, potentially 3+ pitches. So from the right side, if he's in the mid 90s and can get those that curveball and changeup, can throw him for strikes, which he's shown he can do at times, I think he could be a solid number three.
Now, he's, you know, had some issues with the control early, but again, no walks in the start you saw. Last season at High Wilmington, 2.6 walks per 9, which is pretty good rate for a kid his age, just 21 years old. 2.5 walks per 9 the year before, but then, you know, 1.5 in 2012. How do you think the command profile will ultimately look when he's in the majors? Do you think he's, you know, got the command to be, you know, 2.5 type of guy, or do you think that'll tick up as he moves up the ladder?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the 2.5 to 3 level is pretty reasonable to expect once he gets there. I think that it's going to be on him. It's going to be imperative for him to kind of hang around that rate for him to get to the big leagues. Like, I don't see them rushing him up the ladder until they're confident that he's got that command kind of refined. So, you know, I didn't get any kind of a vibe that he was going to be knocking on the big league door this season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 2016 though, I think, you know, we've talked about it before. I mean, that Royals rotation, once they get some of those less appealing guys out of there, like a Vargas and a Guthrie and, you know, Edinson Volquez, you could be looking at just a ton of really kind of electric young arms in that rotation.
Now, his teammate, third baseman Hunter Dozier, you know, working through some mechanical issues so far at the dish right now. You know, he's hitless in three games. I'm sorry, it looks like hitless in his last three games before Tuesday. But what did you see? Did you see a hitch in his mechanics, or did what were your takeaways with Hunter Dozier?
I just don't think he's all that confident or all that, you know, prepared at the plate. I mean, he kind of looks at time like, you know, he's taking a lot of pitches that he shouldn't take and swinging at a lot of pitches he shouldn't swing at. So he just kind of looked like he didn't really have a great plan up there. You know, ever since he's gotten to Double A, that's been kind of an issue for him where he really has a hard time laying off breaking balls down and away. And so that's a lot of what he's seeing right now. I think it's going to be kind of a slow burn with him. He might just spend all of Double A, all of 2015 at Double A, and you know, he might even start 2016 back there and then get up to Triple A at some point then. I don't see him being an impact guy anytime soon, but he does have, like, if you just look at his Fangraphs or Baseball Reference page, like the power isn't going to really look like it's there. I don't think he's hit more than 5 or 6 homers in a season at any one level. So it doesn't really look like he's a power hitter, but in BP, you know, he had really, really impressive power. Opposite field power was going, you know, 30, 40 feet over the fence to right center. And he's a big guy. Like he's really impressive. I mean, the only guy who was physically really more imposing than him that I got to talk to was Nomar Mazara. So, you know, I think he's got the physical tools. It's just all about that approach. And once he can kind of get that hit tool mastered and get back to being kind of like a 20 to 25% strikeout guy instead of a 30, 35% strikeout guy, then I think that power will start to play a bit more.
Yeah, you look at the ISO, he hasn't had a mark above 134 above rookie ball. But you look at the BABIPs, and that really kind of supports what you said. I mean, really high marks, hitting the ball hard, you know, and it's finding gaps. Aside from, you know, 2014 at Double A, really above, you know, 348, right around 348 in full season affiliates. Do you think that's sustainable as he moves up? He's going to be able to maintain high BABIPs and then thus high averages?
Yeah, I think so, especially you know, especially at AAA, might not have a, you probably won't have a BABIP that high in the majors, but, you know, he's, you know, he looks like a little lost at the plate right now, but he's still a pretty confident kid. He's, you know, definitely views himself as a middle of the order bat. So I just think it's going to take maybe a bit longer than you might expect, given that he's at Double A right now. And they don't, there's just no sense in rushing him because I think he's the type of guy that if you got aggressive with promotions with him, he could just really struggle at the big league level. I think you want to give him a few more years in the minors to really kind of get a very firm approach at the plate so that when he gets there, he's not going to be completely lost.
Now, Joey Gallo is not at this event or at this series for the Rangers. Recovering from a surgery to remove a bone from his left ankle. Raul Mondesi also out of action, but with the likes of, you know, Nick Williams, Nomar Mazara, Jorge Alfaro, and others, I find it kind of surprising that you actually tabbed Jorge Bonifacio as the most impressive offensive player you saw in the series. A pair of doubles in a game, and you also posted a video you took of him. I think it's looking like he's smacking a homer. I mean, crushed it pretty well. What all did you like from his offensive game?
Well, you know, it's definitely not to say that I think he's the best of that bunch, but just from what I saw, he was easily the best. You know, had a pair of doubles in Monday's game, and then yeah, that homer that I took video of and put up in the article, just hit an absolute bomb over the bullpen in left. I think, you know, two of his homers this year have come against righties. I think two have come against lefties. So he kind of has the look of a guy that might need to be platooned at some point, but right now that's not the case. He does obviously struggle with off-speed stuff away, down and away, but that's kind of, I mean, everybody kind of has that. So just based off what he did in 2014, the way that he's come into 2015, I mean, everything he's hitting is hard. I really think that you're going to look at his numbers at the halfway point and be pretty impressed, because this is a guy that I think a lot of people wrote off. I mean, I didn't even have him in my top 200 coming into the year. But now, I mean, I think that he, you know, some guys, double A, the move from high A to double A is a really tough adjustment for some guys. And I think that, you know, his second time around, he looks pretty confident at the plate, and I'm kind of excited to see what he does this year.
Yeah, he's already matched his home run total for four at the same level last year, but four in 566 plate appearances last year, really tapping into that power right now. Do you think it's, you know, something, you know, in his with his plate discipline, or is it more so, you know, just that his development has reached a point where he's, you know, more confident at the dish and able to, you know, make more contact?
I just think that he knows how pitchers are trying to approach him, and so he goes up there with a plan. Like he's looking for something specific, and when he sees it, he's not missing. And you know, he might have just been really kind of lost. I mean, he might have just been kind of like Hunter Dozier looked right now. That might have been how he looked last year. So he's definitely comfortable at the plate, really confident right now. So I think that it's just a kind of maturity thing. I mean, he knows what he's doing in the box, just looking for stuff to drive. You know, the two doubles he hit, he wasn't trying to do too much with them. You know, he just kind of put them into the gap where, you know, he did what he could with them. And, you know, that's a mark of a hitter that's maturing.
Yeah, it looks like, you know, I've been watching this video on repeat since, you know, I brought this up. And I really like, you know, he's got a nice kind of short, compact swing, you know, and he's still – you know, able to crush this pitch, and that's really good to see. I mean, just him, you know, having a pretty short stride, you know, a little bit of a leg kick, but really, you know, fluid and compact. I like to see that. Now, you mentioned that was outside of your top 200 prospect rankings coming into the year. You know, I think you're going to be updating your rankings soon, and hopefully we can do a new roundtable, prospect roundtable pretty soon. But where do you think Bonifacio realistically will probably slot into your updated list?
I think he'd probably be in my top 150 actually right now. I mean, it's one of those things where he's a guy that if he just rakes for the next 2 months, he'll be up at AAA, and then, you know, getting another challenge, and then who knows what happens from there. I mean, I think he might be less than a year away from getting a taste of the big leagues, and you know, they don't have a ton of power in that lineup. I mean, they're really good at making contact, but I mean, a guy like that could be useful even if it was just off the bench in September or something like that. So I think that his proximity, his power from the right side, I mean, it's an intriguing package. So I mean, I think you got to put him ahead of some of those arms that are in the lower levels, and you know, some of the, like the middle infielders that are down in the lower levels. I mean, I'd prefer to bet on a guy like Bonifacio.
Now, jumping to the Rangers side for AA Frisco, Nomar Mazara, you actually only got to see two at-bats from him because he was hit by a pitch on the toe and then had to leave the next game early as he was the DH. I want to know first, before we talk about his actual talent, you got to talk to him, right?
Yeah.
Was he cool?
He was super cool. I mean, of the – I talked to probably seven or eight players, and he was the one that had the most kind of just sort of like it factor, like okay, where you sort of, you know, that he's in the room, that type of thing. You know, just kind of, I mean, he looks like a future star. just a really, really nice guy. Yeah, I mean, I can't say enough about Mazar. I mean, he was really cool. I mean, you know, still kind of working on his English and everything, but I mean, was really, you know, engaged in the interview and was definitely trying to answer my questions as best he could. So, yeah, I mean, it was really cool to meet him. He's been one of my favorite prospects for a while now, and you know, his early season numbers are something else. Not hitting any home runs yet, but I mean, everything else is kind of off the charts.
I mean, from the little that I've seen him, I mean, really amazing, you know, fluid swing that's generates a ton of power, and good to hear that he's, you know, a cool guy and was, you know, receptive to the interview and was able to give, you know, some quality answers and, you know, sit, you know, take his time to really engage with you. That's pretty awesome. And yeah, just 20, he's not even 20 yet. I mean, 19 years old, but it, you know, he's got all the tools to really, you know, rocket up prospect list. I know you were already really aggressive on him in your rankings. Is he the kind of guy who, you know, once he gets to the majors, could be a, you know, top 30 to 40 annual, you know, fantasy player?
Yeah, I think so. The hit tool is kind of where it's going to kind of decide whether he's a top 50 guy or a top 100 guy, because, you know, I think the power, nobody really doubts the power. You know, he's got 65, 70 power, and he's 19. So don't look at his numbers like last year. Well, he only hit 22 homers, or he, you know, he doesn't have any homers yet this year. Well, yeah, he's 19 and he's playing at double A. So that's like, he's, don't worry about that. But the hit tool is where it gets interesting, because if he can hit for like 300 or 280 the rest of the year at double A, then I'm going to be really, really kind of impressed. And you might have to start looking at him as a guy that could just really carry, you know, those two categories. I think that it's possible that he could have a not even a plus hit tool, but a plus hit tool. He's hitting everything super hard right now. Not trying to hit homers. The BABIP's obviously part of the reason why his average is so high, but you know, I think he might settle into, you know, 300, 320 this year, and he might get up to AAA in the second half. He might even get skipped to AAA and go straight to the big leagues because of Mazar, Alfaro, Gallo, and Nick Williams. You know, someone in the Rangers organization told me that he's the one that has, like, the fewest flaws. He's got the least to work on. So if he can just kind of hit the ground running at AA this year, I mean, he fills a need for them on the big league roster. So, you know, with a guy like Gallo, he's got holes in his swing. Alfaro needs some stuff to work on defensively and offensively. You know, Nick Williams, who knows, you know, how much of this early season success is legit. But Mazar, there really aren't that many questions.
Man, I mean, big guy, 6'4", 195, 19 years old. I mean, you mentioned the lack of the power through 10 games. I mean, he's only got one extra base hit. It's a double, but he's actually batting 382, 13 for 34. I mean, 3-7 walk to strikeout, too. So, I mean, he's advanced for his age, most definitely, and somebody who, you're right, he fills a need right now. You know, he's not going to get the call right now, but there is definitely a glaring hole in the outfield on the major league roster.
And he was the only one that got a hit off Miguel Almonte in that start Monday, and you know, so he just ripped smoked a single back up the middle. I mean, Almonte was really tough to hit that day, so just the fact that he was willing to just kind of take that and not try to do too much against a pitcher that was in the zone like that just kind of speaks to his maturity at the plate. And you know, just talking to him about his approach this year, and you know, he definitely views himself as a power hitter, but he's not worried about that at all. He's just trying to make really good contact and take what the pitchers give him.
That's cool. Did you record your interview with him?
I did.
I want to hear that sometime.
Sure.
It'd be cool. Now, I mentioned you were aggressive on him in your prospect rankings. You have him at 20th on your top 200. Do you think you could, you know, see yourself even bumping him even higher, maybe above a guy like Jose Peraza or maybe Francisco Lindor even?
Yeah, I think that probably has to happen. You know, possibly ahead of, I'm trying to think which arms I have ahead him ahead
Looks
of.
Looks like Rodon, Archie Bradley,
I'd probably
Julio Urias.
I'd probably put him ahead of Bradley, Rodon, and Bundy, to be honest with you. I have such a hard time envisioning him not succeeding. Like, so, you know, if you can get a right fielder that's going to hit 30 homers and hit 275 and be in the middle of a lineup in Texas that's going to someday have Joey Gallo and Jorge Alfaro in it, I mean, that's and Prince Fielder, I mean, that's tough to pass up.
Now, coolness level with Nick Williams. what do you got on the 20 to 80?
75 cool with Nick Williams.
Wow.
super smooth guy. He was really nice too, though. I mean, he was definitely didn't like, I mean, I asked him some stuff about, you know, his struggles, you know, in terms of his approach last year and in the fall league and his defensive struggles. And he wasn't, you know, didn't shy away from answering those questions. I asked him if he thought that he could go 30-30 at the highest level, and he said that that would be pretty much no problem. I might have the quote in here. Yeah, he said, I think I could do 30-30 for sure. 30 stolen bases I should be able to do easily. The 30 homers, it'll come. So
nice.
Definitely like the confidence and the swag. Was fortunate in the last game. His last at-bat of the last game that I was there for, he just smoked a ball to right center, landed it up on the knoll up there, and, you know, had the high finish. I mean, just a really cool looking home run.
Yeah.
So
that was a nice little, you know, the bat up in the air pimping move.
The thing is, like, you look at his numbers in the minors, and it might not seem that he's got, you know, the capability to steal 30 bags. I was actually kind of surprised to hear him say that he thought the 30 steals would be easier for him than the 30 homers, because I mean, I definitely think that the power is pretty legit, but you just watch him. I mean, he beat out infield hit, you know, he's just books it around the bases. I could definitely see him being a 30 steal guy. I think it's going to take some time because he's still learning how to be a base stealer, still learning how to read pitchers and knowing when to go. But I think if he can figure that out, I definitely could see that happening.
I got to see him in the Arizona Fall League, and you know, the raw tools really stand out, especially, I mean, even among all these elite, you know, prospects who were there and have earned that trip to the Fall League, he really stood out. But also, you know, the troubles at the plate were pretty obvious, especially against breaking pitches. Really had a hard time laying off those, you know, outside of the, you know, down in the zone or, you know, below the zone. He really just kind of swung away no matter what. Now, you say that you talked to him about his new approach at length, and what exactly has he done to, you know, cut down on those swings and misses and, you know, lay off the breaking balls?
He just wants to kind of go up there with a pretty rigid plan where he's not going to swing at any borderline fastballs or really any breaking balls until there's two strikes in the count. And
I think that's really smart, actually.
Yeah, and so what that's doing is, you know, if a guy wants to throw him a, you know, meatball fastball in, you know, a 1-1 count or an 0-1 count, he's going to drive it. And, you know, if not, then it's on the pitcher to make sure that his borderline stuff is hitting and that his breaking balls are going for strikes. So I definitely think that that's something that's going to allow, if he can stick to it. I mean, that's the key too, is he's a guy who, you know, he's had focus issues in the past, and, you know, football was his first sport of interest, just kind of ended up being better at baseball. So that's what he went with. But, you know, I could see him being a guy that finds it tough to kind of go up there and be patient like that. But if he can do that, I think you're going to see his numbers this year be pretty crazy good, because I don't think there's enough good pitchers to punish him for a plan like that. But in the big leagues, it's going to take a little bit more than that, right? I mean, you're going to need to, you know, work on pitch recognition a bit more. But with this plan, it'll allow him to kind of refine his eye because he'll be seeing, you know, these pitches. He won't be swinging at them. That'll allow him to kind of take in what the pitchers are showing him out there. So very encouraging to at least see that he knows that he does need to do something, right?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the first step is, you know, like a guy like Javi Baez, like, I mean, Nick Williams' current plan is better than the one Baez brought to the big leagues last year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's nice to at least see that he knows something needs to change.
Yeah, and he is proactive about changing it. I mean, that was one thing in the fall league too, is, you know, the struggles, but he also kind of looked, you know, a little bit frustrated, a little bit, you know, kind of tuned out eventually. And I think that's something that scouts saw and weren't really that happy about, but that's great to see that, you know, and you mentioned that football was kind of his first sport, that he is, you know, really dedicated to improving his game and his approach. I'm definitely pulling for him. I think, you know, I was actually the high man. I was surprised because I know you like Williams. I was the high man on him in the round table. And yeah, I think just based on the raw tools, I mean, alone, he should be a major leaguer. And the fact that, you know, he's taking measures to, you know, improve things and you know, lay off the breaking pitches, that's very encouraging for a guy his age.
You might not be the high man on him next time around.
Yeah, I don't expect to be.
I came into the season with those reservations that we talked about, but just kind of, you know, seeing what, you know, the steps he's taken, I definitely see him, if not being in the top 50, you know, kind of knocking on the door of the top 50. They kind of have a nice thing sort of set up where if they, you know, their kind of dream scenario, I think, is for sometime next year to be able to roll out a, you know, Williams in left, Martin in center, Mazzara in right, and Chu as the DH. I think that makes a lot of sense. And then kind of plug and play Chu and sit him against some lefties. I think that would really be a fun, kind of exciting outfield for the Rangers and their fans, which is definitely something they're lacking right now.
Yeah, and Chu has had some issues in right, too. So, I mean, some pretty bad mistakes out there.
I think he's going to be DHing sooner than later.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Now, I talked about Nick Williams, his tools, but you actually said that from what you saw, catcher Jorge Alfaro may have the most tools on the Frisco roster. You know, I am excited about this kid. I even, you know, took him. It was one of my last picks in an AL-only league, 12-team, just because, you know, the Rangers have been pretty aggressive in promoting young guys. But, you know, still down at Double-A right now. I'm kind of surprised to see you say that, because didn't you just trade him in our keeper league?
Yeah, no, I did just trade him. I traded Alfaro, Javier Baez, and a second round pick next year for Hanley Ramirez, whose contract expires at the end of the year. Definitely a win now move. I mean, that trade has the potential to kind of haunt me like 3 years down the line, but I mean, I think I can win this year, and if that happens, then I don't really care how good these guys are. Mm-hmm. Alfaro, yeah, so like that wasn't me when I said he's got the most tools in the system. That was just kind of through talking to people. I mean, I didn't, you know, have enough time to really say anything like that definitively, but I mean, people down there definitely think that, you know, he's a five tool player potentially, and he's a catcher, which is kind of crazy. 55, 60 speed, which is crazy. In BP, like, you know, I talk all the time about the BP show Joey Gallo put on at the Futures game, but in their typical BPs, just for regular games, like, he's not really trying to put on that kind of a show. And the one who actually ends up putting on the most impressive BP apparently is Alfaro, just based on his natural just power. The thing is, he's been striking out a ton this year, and that was the case in the games I saw him in. You know, that's he knows, you know, he was a really nice guy too, great guy to talk to, but I just think that it's going to take him a while to kind of figure out upper level pitching. I think he's easy to kind of expose if you can hit your spots and can throw a breaking ball for strikes, and just kind of keep him guessing. But, you know, a couple years down the line, he could be, you know, one of the better fantasy catchers in baseball. I just think that there's out of Williams, Alfaro, Mazar, and Gallo, I think Alfaro has just as much flame out potential as, you know, Williams or Gallo. I think Mazar is the safest of the bunch, but, you know, everyone talks about Gallo and Williams and their approach. I think that there's a chance that you might see Alfaro be a guy who maybe if he doesn't reach his ceiling, he could just be like a 220 hitter that gets you 15 homers, 10 steals, and just never really reaches his full potential if he can't kind of figure out the best way to go at high-end pitching.
Yeah, and, you know, the concerns you pointed out, definitely valid, but, you know, you trading him isn't a complete indictment of him as a prospect. I mean,
I offered, like, this was a deal with Chris Smith. I told him, you know, Alfaro, Tapia, Baez, pick two, and he was kind of thinking it over for quite a while. I think it took him like 8 hours to finally come up with Alfaro and Baez as the guys he wanted. So it wasn't, I knew it was going to take guys like that to get Hanley. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't going to be able to offer him, you know, Jake Thompson and, you know, Vogelbach or something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was going to take some high end guys. So I didn't mind parting with him, especially just cause I don't see Alfaro being a big help to my team in the next 1 to 2 years, which is kind of my window right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, and I'm surprised you even threw Tapia out there as a guy
I didn't want to trade any of those guys. Honestly, I probably wanted to hold on to Tapia the most out of those three, so I was kind of glad he did what he did. But
Tapia's the guy that I would want most out of them.
Yeah, it's weird because Baez and Alfaro, I think, have the two highest ceilings of those three, but I am the most confident in Tapia out of those three. So,
nice.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't mind that trade, but I mean, yeah, Alfaro was super cool to talk to. I mean, he's also, you know, English is his second language too, but I mean, I actually spent more time talking to him than any of the other people I talked to. He was just really, you know, didn't mind talking baseball, just, you know, back and forth, even though probably some of my questions weren't the greatest, but, you know, he was definitely willing to answer them. And he's so team first. Like, it's a great quality to kind of have in a catcher. You know, he didn't want to talk really about himself that much at all, just wanted to kind of talk about, you know, the pitchers that he calls and just kind of pumping up their arsenals and talking about just, like, I asked him, you know, do you consider yourself a power hitter because of, you know, how impressive you can be in BP? And he's like, I don't really try to hit home runs. That's what we have Gallo for. So, you know, that's kind of a cool attitude to have for a guy that's as talented as he is.
I mean, that the speed he brings to the table is really, you know, something to dream on. Then you match that with, you know, 30 home run upside. I mean, a lot to like, but I'm with you that, you know, some reservations, but, you know, and especially, you know, not really expecting any more for him to be a candidate for a call-up, you know, in September. But somebody who's, you know, behind the plate, I mean, maybe Kyle Schwarber, the only real catcher who, you know, has more upside than he does.
Right. I mean, Blake Swihart's the guy with the, you know, the floor and the guy that's probably the closest to the show. But Swihart can't match what Schwarber and Alfaro bring in terms of upside. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think I'd take Schwarber over Alfaro, but, you know, a lot of that's just because if he doesn't work out as a catcher, they're ready to move him to the outfield. So, I mean, Alfaro, they're going to keep him at catcher just because of how good he is potentially defensively there. So they're going to just keep him until he's ready to debut at that position.
Now, you've said that, you know, you really think the Rangers is kind of a dark horse, best farm system in baseball. And one of the arms that you didn't actually get to see but highly touted here, Jake Thompson, right-hander, just 21 years old. I picked up a share, thankfully, in one of my keeper leagues. But, you know, really, you know, it came on the basis of your expectations and your hype for him. And I really, you know, I've liked what I've seen in limited exposure to him. What are your thoughts on him? And do you think he's a guy who could also rise relatively quickly?
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. I mean, just based on, you know, the numbers at all of his recent stops, traded over to the Rangers in that Joaquin Soria deal with Detroit last year. And when he got into the Rangers organization, they really started to stress him throwing the four-seamer more, and this year the changeup more, because he's got such a wicked out pitch with that slider that they really wanted him to kind of stop being so reliant on it. And part of that is to kind of, you know, keep the hitters off balance. But I'm guessing part of it, too, is just because if you're going to be a guy that just relies on a slider like that so often, I mean, I think your chances of injury go up a tad more than the typical pitcher. So he's been throwing his changeup a lot more in the early going, and he said that that's, you know, a big part of why he's been so successful. The strikeouts haven't been awesome, but I mean, the sample size is so small that I'm not reading too much into that, but the run prevention's been great. He's not allowing base runners, so definitely like Thompson. The one thing I would say, though, I mean, you asked if he's going to move fast. I don't really think he gets there till next year. I got to talk to Alfaro and some people with the Rough Riders about Chichi Rodriguez, who was there last year, and he, on the other hand, like, unlike Thompson, who has the wipeout slider, Rodriguez doesn't have, Gonzalez doesn't have the crazy, you know, one pitch, but everything he has moves. He can command everything. He apparently, like, he would have been the coolest guy to talk to if I had gotten a chance to chat with him. Apparently he's just really fun to talk with, but he's a guy that I think you will see in Texas within a month or so.
Yeah, I mean, they brought up Wandy Rodriguez to start Friday. Yeesh. And I know, I forget who it was, who's, you know, has some mechanical issues to work out. I'm sorry, I have to look this up. Ross Detweiler, not moving to the bullpen yet, but needs to work out some mechanical issues on the side.
That's the guy. You know, I think you see Chi-Chi take that spot pretty soon here. So if you're in a full season league where, you know, maybe a 16 team league, I think it's probably not a bad idea to grab him. I did hear from someone that he might be a guy where, you know, his first 20 turns through the rotation are not as good as his second 20 turns, just because it might take him, you know, a minute to kind of get used to the competition and what kind of pitches he can get away throwing and what counts and stuff like that. But there's also the chance that he could just get off, you know, really going well. I mean, there's no sign of anywhere in his minor league career of him really struggling. So definitely a guy worth grabbing.
Outstanding in spring training, almost, you know, fought for a job out of camp, but actually has had some issues through his first two starts. I mean, we're talking about a minuscule sample size here, 9.2 innings, but 7 earned runs allowed and 5 walks and just 4 strikeouts. I don't really think, you know, I think they'd look at the body of work rather than these two outings when determining. Maybe they'd like to see him get on track with a strong start, but I don't think it'll take a prolonged stretch of success for them to really consider calling him up.
Yeah, and that's, you know, at Round Rock, that can happen. I definitely wouldn't read too much into that at all. I think that they're aware of the kind of pitcher he can be. I think he'll be in that rotation sooner than later.
James, thanks for all your analysis and then for the great article. Again, if you want to check out his latest Farm Futures piece, you can do that at rotowire.com. If you don't have a subscription, go to rotowire.com/pod. That's rotowire.com/POD for a free 10 days on us. James, I'm going to skip the grading of the wrestler this week, but going to let our listeners know that we will be grading out Razor Ramon next week and possibly a second entertainer.
Yeah.
Sports entertainer.
That's going to be fun. I didn't want to half-ass it today, and we kind of got interrupted in the middle of the pod, so running short of time, but yeah, look for that one next week.
Sounds good. Well, thank you for listening to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast. James, thanks for staying late, and we'll see you guys next Thursday.